good? Can you hear me clearly? The conversation that Madi was referring to was my involvement in the reserve force. And I'm checking on this microphone because I do the text and the commentary for the Cape Town Military Tattoo. So this is a pun for the tattoo. November, you have to be there. It's the best tattoo in the continent. Right, from military to botanical. Today's talk is a brief overview. Obviously, it's going to be superficial, of the flora of South Africa, some of the characteristics of it, and, of course, some of the challenges that it's facing. So the subtitle, Biodiversity Hotspot, that term hotspot was coined initially to define areas that were exceptionally rich in biodiversity and under extreme threat. And the whole of the Cape Floral region and the succulent Karoo are together one of these biodiversity hotspots. So we're living in the cauldron, basically. To put this into context here, South Africa may have as much as 10% of the world's flora in less than 1% of the land area. Now, when we say may have as much as, nobody actually knows how rich the world's flora is yet, but certainly we do know how small South Africa is. Now, if we look at the floristic kingdoms, by the use of this term floristic kingdom, we're describing areas that are linked by particular relationships among their plants. So it's not so much whether they're trees, shrubs, or grasses, it's whether they have a genetic or evolutionary relationship that defines these kingdoms. And just to give, this is, you don't have to, of course, worry about these figures, but it's to give you some idea that kingdom that's marked in number 4, identified as the Cape, you can see it's by far the smallest in terms of land area. It's 0.9, it's 900,000 square kilometers, and it has 9.5, it's going up for 10,000 now, species of vascular plants, that's flowering plants, gymnosperms, ferns, and their allies. Globally, that's relatively small compared to the other kingdoms, but in terms of the area that this kingdom occupies, it's vastly richer than many of the others. And more interestingly, you'll see where it's situated in the temperate zone. This is very, very strange. Normally, it's tropical regions that are most diverse. So, South Africa's flora is proportionally, certainly the most diverse on the African continent. And if we have a look at this map here, for instance, the whole of tropical Africa, which covers around 20 million square kilometers, is home to 30 or 40,000 species, where South Africa, which is 2.5 million, that's a little over a tenth, has 20,000. So nearly as many as tropical Africa. This is a very, very peculiar situation. I can't stress this enough. This is a temperate flora. It's supposed to be poor. If we look at West Africa, which is in the tropics and subtropics, it has 7,000 species. And East Africa is richer with 12,000, a little under 12,000. These are estimates. Probably that richness is a result of the escarpment, the eastern escarpment, which we get as the Drakensberg, and which provides increased habitats, temperate montane habitats, which are largely lacking in the western part of the continent. Now, not only do we have so many species, but we have so many species that only occur here. So that's what that word endemic means. It means restricted to. So if you hear people saying, oh, this is endemic, you need to check with them, endemic to what? We're endemic to the world. because we occur here. We're restricted to the world, but in this case we mean endemic to South Africa. So just under two-thirds of the species here are found only in South Africa. Now, another peculiarity is that the flora is not spread evenly over South Africa, but you're sitting in the nest of it here. We're sitting in the southwestern Cape, where most of the species, well, not most, but a disproportionately high number are concentrated. So out of our flora of somewhere around 20,000 species, 12,800 occur in the summer rainfall area, and 9,500 down here in the winter rainfall area. But of course the winter rainfall area is much smaller than the summer rainfall area. So we have a much, much higher concentration of plant species in the southwestern Cape than anywhere else in South Africa. And South Africa in turn has a much higher concentration of species than anywhere else in Africa. Right, the Cape Floristic Region, previously known as the Cape Floral Kingdom. These are semantic terms. It doesn't really matter at what level we're regarding this region. The facts remain the same. Historically, the Cape has long enjoyed a recognition as a very peculiar area among the botanists for the diversity, the beauty, and in fact, the peculiarity of its plants. And here's a quote that I find particularly enjoyable by a professional explorer, William Burchell, who travelled widely through South Africa in the early years of the 19th century. All that I pictured to myself of the riches of the Cape in botany was far surpassed by what I saw in this day's walk. And it is not an exaggerated description if it should be compared to a botanic garden. So great was the variety everywhere to be met with. This was written in November, when Virgil walked from Cape Town to Sea Point. It's not the best part time of the year to see anything, but he was still staggered. And he should know, he travelled the country in the early 19th century when you could still travel over vast areas that were unspoiled and see really what there was. Now we struggle. So as I mentioned, the distinct nature of the region, that's the southwestern Cape, or the Cape Floral Region, was established early on by plant geographers, although initially, obviously, due to their unfamiliarity with the region, they were struggling with where the boundaries lay. So this is a map from a German called Scho in 1822, and you see, somewhere down there in the southern part of South Africa is this region, the South African Kingdom, he called it. Somebody who lived here drew the boundary much more accurately. That's Harry Bowlis. The name should be familiar to many of you in the Cape here. He was instrumental in establishing the Bowlis Herbarium here at the university. He was a retired stockbroker, so we know which is the more profitable of those careers. And he wrote, "I know of but one sharp floral boundary in South Africa, that which cuts off the peculiar Cape flora from the interior, and I believe that there exist few botanical boundaries as rigid as this." And he's correct. The boundary is very, very sharp. There are various reasons for that. But you know when you leave the Cape Floral Kingdom, there's no question about it. You go up the Hex River Pass and you leave it. Or you cross the Olifants River north of Clan William and you leave it. So it's very, very clear. Much less clear, for instance, is the boundary between the eastern coastal, the Pondoland, Somali region, and the rest of the country. It's much more diffuse. Here, you're in or you're out. Engler defined this a bit more clearly as well, largely following Bowlis, and he termed it the Cape region. And then we get this wonderful term, the Cape Floral Kingdom, courtesy of a Russian, I think he was actually Georgian, Taktajan, who wrote a wonderful book on Cape Floral Kingdoms, on Floral Kingdoms of the World. And that's the map reproduced here. And there you see the Cape down in the southern tip of the continent. Minute compared to all the other floral kingdoms. Now, as I say, just remember these kingdoms are defined on shared relationships among the plants. We're going to look a little later on at the biomes, which are defined in quite a different way. They're not the same thing at all. It's apples and pears here. And then finally, we have our current definition of the Cape Floristic Region. It's been downgraded from a kingdom to a region, but as I say, that does not take away anything from its special features. And you'll see the boundary really coincides with the extent of fynbos vegetation. So the Cape Floral Kingdom is largely coincident with fynbos, but it does include other vegetation types. So in most of our minds, the two tend to be synonymous, but they're not exactly. So it stretches there from Newburgville in the northwest down to Port Elizabeth in the southeast. So let's have a little run through some of these figures. As I've said, whatever its status, the Cape Flora is the most diverse flora in Africa and the most diverse temperate flora in the world. We've been through those comparative figures for tropical Africa, but let's look at the bottom two lines. Those are two other temperate Mediterranean type floras, the southwestern Australia, which is also very rich, 2.5 million square kilometers, with estimated 4,000 to 8,000 species, and 70% endemics, and the Cape, probably less than half that area, with certainly more species and a similar level of endemism. Now, that's two-thirds endemic species in the Cape is very odd. Just think about it. What stops them moving out of the Cape or out of South Africa? Nothing. No physical boundary. The continent is continuous. These levels of endemism are characteristic of islands where there's no way that the plants can move off that land mass, their sea. So to have these high levels of endemism in a continental flora is very, very odd. So let's summarize the characteristics of the Cape Floral region. It has a high level of species endemism at 68%, which is characteristic of islands, as I said, but relatively low number of the genera. In other words, many of the species here are found nowhere else, but they derive from genera that occur outside the region. It has a very unusual, unique, in fact, family composition, with a high diversity of ice plants, that's mesems, azoaceae, ericas, heaths, heathers, irises, scrofulariaceae, I'm going to say snapdragons, but they're no longer in that family, suteras, what are the other genera that we know here, diaceas, hemimeras, those cute little nemesias, that sort of family. Lots of proteas and lots of cape reeds. Another peculiar feature of it is that huge numbers of families, of the families, 10%, they account for most of the species. I beg your pardon, very few families account for most of the species. So there are a huge number of species in very few families. So disproportionate representation of some families, very large families, and then lots of very small families. So the species are not distributed evenly through the plant families. And similarly, this odd distribution of species among genera, there are some enormous genera, Erica, 800 species of Ericas. And then we get a lot of other genera with just one species. So the distribution among the families and genera is very skewed. Right, let's move on now from some of the floristic figures there, and particularly if we focus then on the Cape floristic region, to another concept, the biome concept. Now, I know that you will have heard this word, and what exactly is a biome? We know it's some sort of vegetation type, but how are they defined, and what are some of the characteristics of them? So South Africa has representation of 9 biomes, which, let me tell you, is very, very many. There are other countries in Africa, large countries in Africa, that may only have 1 biome. So they are very uniform for their vegetation. We are very varied for our vegetation. And obviously that's one of the reasons why we have so many species here. So these different colors show you the distribution of the different biomes. And again, you'll see they're not all the same size. And we look at them a bit more closely. So let me just tell you now, what is a biome? It's a large scale, that means over tens or hundreds of square kilometers, vegetation unit with a characteristic structure. Now when I use the word structure, I mean the growth form of the plants that occupy it and the structure of the actual vegetation. Is it multi-storied? Has it only got one story of plants? Those sort of measurable issues, physical characteristics of the flora as opposed to the different types of species that you find in it. So it's a large-scale vegetation unit with a characteristic structure and exposed to particular macroclimatic, again a fancy word, it means large-scale climate patterns, often linked to levels of disturbance such as grazing and fire. Now, we are well aware fire is an important determinant or driver of fynbos, so that is one of the macro climatic patterns that characterize fynbos as a biome, not fynbos as a floristic type. And as I said, structure refers to the appearance and physical characteristics of the vegetation unit. Thus, the dominant life or growth forms of its continuing species, not their taxonomic relationships. So, savanna. Savanna is the orange zone there up in the north. Huge parts of Northern Cape, Northwest really, Limpopo, and extending down into KwaZulu-Natal. And it's essentially, you know intuitively what savanna looks like. It covers about a third of the country. And it's a two-tiered open or closed woodland with an upper woody layer formed by trees, or characteristically thorn trees, but not, of course, only, and a lower herbaceous, usually grassy layer. And, of course, savanna extends extensively northwards through the continent. Some of the characteristic plants, this is obviously the impala lily, Adenium multiflorum, which I must tell you, if you've ever tried to find in the wild, is quite a struggle. They are in Kruger Park, but since there are other inhabitants of Kruger Park, it's not such a good idea to get out. So the point is that you can find them in huge numbers growing in the street plantings of Messina, but to find them in the wild is pretty difficult. So I struggled, and I'm afraid this one comes from Messina, not from Kruger. Other common inhabitants of savanna vegetation are these hibiscus. They're, of course, a largely subtropical family as well. There are many, many species. Hibiscus trionum, which occurs down here in the Cape as well, and Hibiscus cannabinum, named for the leaves that look a little like cannabis leaves. And you know, hibiscus flowers only last a day. And one of the members, of course, is the source of cotton. Two other characteristic families on the left is a cleome. Again, you'll see numerous species of cleome in the semi-arid savanna areas in Namibia as well. And Camichrysta, which used to be cassia, one of the pea family. So largely subtropical and tropical elements in savanna. Apamea and Meremia are two representatives of the Convolvulaceae, or the bindweed family. Apamea halubii, a wonderful thing, it's rather a woody, almost a shrub, that covers the trees in northern Mpumalanga and Limpopo. Very beautiful thing. And then, of course, another view of another kind of savanna. Not the typical savanna. This is dominated by aloe castanea, an odd aloe, and this is on the lime or the dolerite, dolomite hills in northern Mpumalanga. Now, probably the most, how should I describe this? Because I was born in Natal. The most attractive biome for me is grassland. You can see everywhere, you can walk everywhere. They cover almost a comparable area as savanna, but they are restricted to the higher parts of the eastern inland plateau. So basically, the foothills of the Drakensberg and the plateau west, north of the Drakensberg, and extending into Mpumalanga. They're it's a relatively recent biome because of the development and requirement of fire for its maintenance. If you exclude fire from grassland, it tends to revert to some sort of shrubland. Forests expand and you get various forms of savanna taking over. So it's really maintained and requires burning, but that doesn't mean that it's an artificial biome. There are many, many species that are adapted to fire which have evolved under those circumstances. So when we say it's unstratified, we mean it doesn't have particular layers, and it's dominated by grasses, but with a large number of fire-adapted geophytic perennials. It's a fancy word for bulbs, or for woody plants that live underground. They have huge woody storage organs underground, and they put up a few little twiggy bits that get burnt off whenever fire goes through, which is often every year, and then they resprout before the grass cover excludes the light again. And this is an example of one of the many Iridacean grasslands. This is Hesperantha coccinea, grown in gardens under the name Schizer stylus. Another very, very common plant in the Natal grasslands is Agapanthus campanulatus. This is not the garden Agapanthus. That is a species from the Southern Cape. This is a deciduous one, not evergreen. And you can see one of the characteristics, of course, of summer rainfall grasslands is rain clouds. As I said, many geophytes. Gladiolus delini, one of many gladiolus species, is one of the largest genera in the family, and this one is widely distributed across Africa. And Cnophophia tysoni, a very, very beautiful dwarf Cnophophia, probably 1 foot high, restricted to very high altitude grasslands. Another Cnophophia, they do very well in temperate grasslands. We have very poor Cnophophias down here in the Cape. Berkeas, many daisies. Again, these are some of these fire-adapted species. They have rather large woody underground organs so that when the shrubs themselves are burnt off, they resprout. And two more berkeas. I know people tend to find them a little bit off-putting, but this Berkea purpurea is particularly attractive. It's from the Eastern Cape Mountains. Nama Karoo. That's what people say, oh, well, I drove through the Karoo when I went from Cape Town to Johannesburg. Karoo just means dry area, so it's not very informative. So, in fact, sometimes my garden is Karoo in the middle of summer. Nama Karoo really is that red zone, and it is certainly semi-arid. It includes several more particular Karoos the Great Karoo, which is in the basin around between Beaufort West and Graaff-Reinet, the Upper Karoo, which is Fraserburg, Sutherland, Carnarvon, and Williston, Bushmanland, which is inland of Namaqualand, places like Pofadder, Gordonia, which is way up there in the northern Cape, or northwestern Cape, Prieska, those sort of places. So there are lots of different forms of karoo. They're all alike in being dry and in being covered with a sort of grassy dwarf shrubland dominated by drought-adapted shrubs and perennials, and the vegetation is very depauperate. It's very low in species. So not the place to go looking for flowers, unless it's a particular time of the year, for instance, when the rains have first fallen and the yellow pomegranates, the rhizomes are flowering, then it's spectacular. But it's unpredictable, very seasonal. And it includes probably relatively few endemic species. Hibiscus, this very dwarf hibiscus. Very beautiful Hermannia, again. They look wonderful after rain, and for the rest of the year they look terrible. Right, Fynbos, which we all know very, very well. 6.6% of the country. Not very much. It's evergreen. In other words, the plants do not lose their leaves. A grassy shrubland adapted to fire and dominated by small-leaved shrubs and perennials and rich in geophytes. Very, very rich. 16% of the flora is geophytes. This is hugely more than anywhere else in the world. Three times as rich as any other geophytic flora. So this is why there are so many attractions here with all these bulbs. There are very many of them. Obviously, Proteaceae are a characteristic component. This is Mimetes cucullatus. Ericaceae, as I said, 800 odd. Numerous different shapes, sizes, colors of flowers. And then that little pom-pom thing, that shrub is Berzelia. It is a representative of the family Bruniaceae, which is endemic to South Africa. And with the exception of one species, is endemic to the Cape. There's one species that occurs in the Pondoland region on sandstones there. And it's an interesting question as to why it's there and how it's there. It is a species of Raspalia, and most of the Raspalias are here, so it's obviously closely related to the Cape species. It hasn't diverged into a genus on its own. So one can assume that it got there relatively recently, and the theory is that during the last ice age, when the sea level was 100 meters lower than it is now, a large area of the Gullis Plain was exposed and obviously occupied by plants, and that is continuous with the sandstones of Pondoland Coast. So Fynbos elements would have been able to extend all the way along the eastern seaboard on this Agulhas Plain and into Pondoland. And that's probably the source of some of these links now that have been, that the continuity has been broken when the sea levels rose. There are also numbers of succulents, phages, mesems, including this little Conophyton minutum, which it lives up to its name. It's very small, and you can see there it's growing on sandstone, which is the characteristic rock, the geological formation that essentially determines the distribution of Fynbos. You'll recognize that. It's Lion's Head, I beg your pardon, Devil's Peak, and it's after the fire, I think 3 years ago, the chinks came up in thousands or millions after the burn. These chinks, when you see numbers like this, you can see why they were actually a viable export commodity to England and Europe over the summer. In the early part of the 20th century, They last forever. So they were packed, cut, packed, and shipped. And got there perfectly fine to provide some sort of respite from horrible winters in the northern hemisphere. Some of the wonderful bulbs, the iridaceae is best represented in the southwestern Cape. It's a large family worldwide, but essentially its center of diversity is here in South Africa, and particularly in the southwestern Cape. Northern hemisphere has two genera, three. Iris, crocus. There's quite a diversity in South America, but the numbers of species are down here. And Moraya, one of the peacock Morayas, you'll know there's another one of these beautiful Morayas endemic to the observatory grounds. Geyser isotilbergensis, one of the characteristics of fynbos species is that they are extremely localized. Some of them are known from areas no bigger than this lecture theatre, and that puts them at a terrible risk of extinction. If the power goes a little bit too far, or the roads put through. The George lily, Cetanthus elatus, photographed in the Otaniquis, one of the members of the Amaryllis family. You'll, of course, be familiar with Amaryllis belladonna on the traffic island here on Paradise Road. And Dicer longicorna, the drip dicer here on Table Mountain, one of many dicer species, orchids, that are found again in South Africa. We have mostly ground-dwelling orchids, terrestrial orchids, not epiphytes. We have a few, but of course our forest regions are very limited, so the number of epiphytes is rather small. So most of ours are these terrestrials, some of them very spectacular. Now I'm afraid you can't see that graph. But what it actually shows, we plotted the number of species described from the Cape Floral region per 10 year per decade, starting in the mid-1700s when formal botany was first established, up to 2010. And we expected that the rate at which, or the tempo at which these species were being described would be leveling off, because we were hoping to estimate the number of species in the Cape Floristic region, because new ones are being described every year. Well, curiously, the graph is a straight line. So what that actually means is that new species are being described at the same rate today as they were in 1750. So, we actually are at this stage unable to tell or estimate how many species there are going to be here. But it goes to show that the richness here is far from exhausted. Now, the characteristics of most of the new species in the recent years is quite specific. Obviously, they won't be the widespread species because those would have been picked up. So most of the new species are these local endemics that I mentioned. They occur in very small areas. This one, which was described, and you'll tell from the name, it was described in 2010 when the Soccer World Cup was on. It occurs there where you can see. It probably occurred under the Teobatis Kloof Dam, but it's obviously now no longer there. So we're talking very, very small areas. And this is the Brandvlei Dam at Worcester, and the plans are afoot to raise the wall, so this will now be flooded. So there are terrible dilemmas to face here. We need water, and the plants need space. And I'm afraid the two are not always compatible. So, let's look at the next biome, which is the succulent Karoo. Spectacular landscapes in parts, dreary in others. The succulent Karoo occupies about the same extent as the fynbos, but it's inland and to the northwest, it's Namaqualand and the Tankwa, and parts of the Western Escarpment, Sutherland Kalvinia area, and the Little Karoo. It's a dwarf succulent-leaf shrubland, locally rich in geophytes and annuals. Now, this is the first reference we've seen here to these plants, annuals, in our little biome survey. This is one of the many succulent-leafed shrubs in succulent Karoo. It's a Delisperma speciosum, which they flowered quite late in November around Robertson Montague. Wonderful, wonderful things. And I know that you can buy this one and grow it in the gardens. They're very drought resistant. There it is on the left, Chrysanthemum speciosum. Graillum humiflucum, which is also a very common species in succulent Karoo. It's got a succulent root rather than a succulent leaf, so it dies down in the summer because succulent Karoo is very seasonal. It's completely arid in summer, so these plants have to survive. And they either do that by storing water in their leaves, losing their leaves, going underground, or producing seeds, which is where the annuals come in. And there we have the display for which the Macroland is world famous, is the spring displays of annuals. There are a large number of annuals in the Macroland, but this is not what they look like in the wild. This is in disturbed areas. It doesn't take away from how beautiful they are, but this is not what succulent Karoo really looks like. This is a somewhat artificial situation, but it's fine. This is rehabilitated farming land. An example of an annual, Arctotis fastuosa. I know they grow this in the annual beds of Kirstenbosch. One of many Arctotis species. And there's Graillum humiflucum with a little annual Felicia. Now, I've lumped thicket and forest. They're two very minor biomes. Not to say they're not important or interesting, but in terms of area, they're very minor in the South African context. Together, they comprise cover 3.6% of the land area. Forest is the biggest forest patches at Neisner, and then it extends, clinging to little precarious patches on the eastern slopes of the mountains, the southern slopes of the mountains here above Kirstenbosch, all the way up into Mpumalanga, and then up the eastern highlands, Zimbabwe, Kenya. And obviously it's a multi-layered vegetation type with a continuous canopy of more or less evergreen trees. And an open or closed understory, largely without annuals. And that's because annuals species are adapted to seasonal environments. And they're not going to make it in forest. And then thicket is a relatively recently recognized biome. It's essentially centered in the Eastern Cape, Albany, Grahamstown, East London area. It's a dense closed shrubland dominated by evergreen, thick-leaved or succulent perennials. Many of them spiny. And a quick look at some of the forest plants, the Begonia sutherlandi. Again, begonias are tropical, impatiens, tropical. So these are elements from forests in the subtropics that occur here. And finally, the desert biome. That's obviously Welwitschia. Very, very minor. In South Africa, you'll see there it is, that little grey strip along the lower reach of the Orange River, just south of Namibia. It extends into Namibia. Obviously, they have large expanses of desert. It's highly seasonal, droughts, long time periods of drought, and dominated by annuals. This is because that's the growth strategy, the life form that's best able to survive these unpredictable rainfall events. Right. I'm afraid, as I said, having this wonderful diversity comes with a very heavy responsibility. The bad news is that both the Cape Floristic Region, that's the fynbos biome essentially, and the closely related succulent Karoo Region, that's the Macroland, are included among the 25 biodiversity hotspots identified by Conservation International. Together, they house more than half of our species. Nationally, about a quarter of our wildflowers are rare or endangered. That's one in four. So if you're hiking in the Drakensberg, every fourth one you see on average is rare or endangered. And it's worse here. Western Cape, three quarters. That's one in three. So you walk on Table Mountain, Signal Hill, West Coast National Park, every third species you see is endangered. The rest of the country is far less problematical. Eastern Cape is the next most serious, and that's 10% of the Northern Cape, 9.5%. Now remember, this is percentages, so the Northern Cape, their flora is much smaller, so the number will be much smaller. Whereas the Eastern Cape, that 10% is going to be quite a lot of species as well, because they're very rich in plants. So the problem is really here. So if we look here, where are these endangered species concentrated? Well, unsurprisingly, they're where people live and work and farm. So Gauteng and Mpumalanga, which is those highlands which are largely now threatened by forestation, plantations of timber. Natal Coast and just about all of the southwestern Cape, all of the Cape Floral region. And especially the Greater Cape Town area. The major threat, obviously, is at this stage habitat loss and degradation. So all those orange areas mean that is land that has been irreversibly transformed, is the polite way of referring to it. It's essentially been rendered useless for the local flora. So we're facing major problems here if we want to keep these plants. So we need to decide if we want to keep them. And unfortunately, and I actually see this book on the table out there with the same title, Extinction is Forever. We cannot bring these things back. And these wonderful plans that the Australian Museum has for recreating the Tasmanian tiger are as much hot air as comes off the mountain here. It's not possible. So once they're gone, they're gone. And also, the other point, just to bring this home to you, yes, it's wonderful that Erica vestita is growing in Kirstenbosch, and it was rediscovered in a Berlin Botanic Garden or wherever that was, wherever it was rediscovered. And so it's not extinct anymore. It's in the garden, but it is essentially extinct in the wild. What that really means is that that whole habitat where that thing grew is under threat. So these isolated species are representatives of whole habitats, and we don't know what else is there. So I don't want to beat the drum too much, but you know, a lot of this stuff is beautiful and it's wonderful, but it's very, very, very threatened. So sorry for the bad ending, but enjoy them while they're here.